evening, everybody. Welcome to tonight's Molloy program. Thanks for tuning in. Do we have sponsor this hour? Kathy will hand it to me here in a second. We have a lot of ground to cover. Right before the program, though, I got an email from Jude. It's about remembering Marge Vadick, the woman who used to call a lot from Maryville, Indiana. Remember, she passed away this year. And Jude writes, "She's been on my mind and in my heart, Mike. And if I may, let me say, well, hello there, Michael." Love to Marge. Yeah, that's the way she started her phone calls, right, Kathy? Hello there, Michael. Marge. End-of-the-year stuff, remembrances and things like that are usually very unsettling to me. Not that I, like you, like most people, can't handle them, but it's just poignant when you start to realize how much has changed. Anyway, I wanted to start out tonight with something from the Army Court Martial Defense .info. It's a website. Well, and by the way, the first hour tonight is sponsored by Faith Peoples, who writes, "I accidentally discovered Mike while I was driving down to Florida with my newly installed satellite radio. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I had never heard anyone as real as Mike. I've been a faithful listener, podcast subscriber, and recently a chat room participator ever since. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Kathy. You have no idea how important you are to us. Mike, I know you will be embarrassed to read this, but you must do it." Faith is the sponsor of our first hour. Thanks, Faith. This is from a website, armycourtmartialdefense.info, where you can get some pretty scary stuff. We have a lot of political prisoners in this country. We talk about political prisoners in other countries with an air of superiority, to wit, such a thing couldn't happen here. We've always had political prisoners. The most recent and the most invisible right now, in a weird way, visible in another, is PFC Manning, Bradley Manning. He is the one that the military assumes provided WikiLeaks and Julian Assange with videotapes and memos of the war in Iraq from 2 or 3 years ago. BFC Manning was busted, and he's been placed in solitary confinement. He is a political prisoner. He has not been charged with any crime. He's been held for almost 6 months. This is from the Army Court Martial Defense.info website. BFC Manning is currently being held in maximum custody since arriving at the Quantico confinement facility in July 2010. He has been held under POI watch, Prevention of Injury watch. We civilians would call it suicide watch. His cell is approximately 6 feet wide and 12 feet in length. The cell has a bed, a drinking fountain, and a toilet. The guards at the confinement facility are professional. At no time have they tried to bully, harass, or embarrass PFC Manning. Given the nature of their job, however, they do not engage in conversation with PFC Manning. At 5 a.m., he is woken up. On weekends, he is allowed to sleep until 7 a.m. Under the rules for the confinement facility, he is not allowed to sleep at any time between 5 a.m. and 8 p.m. If he attempts to sleep during those hours, he will be made to sit up or stand by the guards. He is allowed to watch television during the day. The television stations are limited to the basic local stations. His access to the television ranges from 1 to 3 hours on weekdays and 3 to 6 hours on weekends. He cannot see other inmates from his cell. He can occasionally hear other inmates talk. Due to being a pretrial confinement facility, inmates rarely stay at the facility for any length of time. Currently, there are no other inmates near his cell. From 7 p.m. to 9:20 p.m., he is given correspondence time. He is given access to a pen and paper. He is allowed to write letters to family, friends, and his attorneys. Each night, during his correspondence time, he is allowed to take a 15 to 20 minute shower. On weekdays and holidays, he is allowed to have approved visitors see him from 12 to 3 p.m. He is allowed to receive letters from those on his approved list and from his legal counsel. If he receives a letter from someone not on his approved list, he must sign a rejection form. The letter is then either returned to the sender or destroyed. He is allowed to have any combination of up to 15 books or magazines. He must request the book or magazine by name. Once the book or magazine has been reviewed by the literary board at the confinement facility and approved, he is allowed to have someone on his approved list send it to him. The person sending the book or magazine to him must do so through a publisher or an approved distributor such as Amazon. They are not allowed to mail the book or magazine directly to PFC Manning. Due to being held on prevention of injury watch, PFC Manning is held in his cell for approximately 23 hours a day. The guards are required to check on PFC Manning every 5 minutes by asking him if he is okay. PFC Manning is required to respond in some affirmative manner. At night, if the guards cannot see PFC Manning clearly because he has a blanket over his head or is curled up towards the wall, they will wake him in order to ensure he is okay. He receives each of his meals in his cell. He is not allowed to have a pillow or sheets. However, he is given access to two blankets and has recently been given a new mattress that has a built-in pillow. He is not allowed to have any personal items in his cell. He is only allowed to have one book or one magazine at any given time to read in his cell. The book or magazine is taken away from him at the end of the day before he goes to sleep. He is prevented from exercising in his cell. If he attempts to do push-ups, sit-ups, or any other form of exercise, he will be forced to stop. He does receive 1 hour of, quote, exercise, end quote, outside of his cell daily. He is taken to an empty room and only allowed to walk. PFC Manning normally just walks figure eights in the room for the entire hour. If he indicates that he no longer feels like walking, he is immediately returned to his cell. When PFC Manning goes to sleep, he is required to strip down to his boxer shorts and surrender his clothing to the guards. His clothing is returned to him the next morning. This was posted December 18th at 10:40 a.m. by the Army Court-Martial Defense Specialist. Now, after the break, the most recent post, that was 21 December, that would be yesterday. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Come to me now, we're rolling, my sweetheart, we're flowing, my God. Searchlight in the big yard swings round with the gun and the spotlights, snowflakes like the dust in the sun. It's Christmas in prison, there'll be music tonight. I'll probably get homesick, I'll love you, good night. Wait a while, time.
Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Now, that was the first item posted that I was sent today, Army Court Martial Defense.info, dated the 17th, 18th of December, 18th, describing a typical day for PFC Manning. Now, this next post is about Article 13 and PFC Bradley Manning. The defense has raised the conditions of PFC Bradley Manning's confinement conditions on multiple occasions with the Quantico Confinement Facility and the Army Staff Judge Advocate's Office assigned to handle this case. Our efforts, unfortunately, have not resulted in any positive results. To its credit, the Staff Judge Advocate's Office is attempting to correct this situation. However, given the fact that Quantico is a Marine Corps facility, it has similarly had no success. PFC Bradley Manning, unlike his civilian counterpart, is afforded no civil remedy for illegal restraint under either the Federal Civil Rights Act or the Federal Tort Claims Act. Similarly, the protection from cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment and Article 55 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice does not apply prior to a court-martial. Thus, the only judicial recourse that is available is under Article 13 of the Uniform Code. Article 13 safeguards against unlawful pretrial punishment and embodies the precept that an accused is presumed innocent until proven guilty. Article 13 provides that, quote, no person, while being held for trial, may be subjected to punishment or penalty other than arrest or confinement upon the charges pending against him, nor shall the arrest or confinement imposed upon him be any more rigorous than the circumstances required to ensure his presence. But he may be subjected to minor punishment during that period for infractions of discipline, end quote. Military courts have consistently asserted Article 13 protection broadly to protect service members awaiting trial. Illegal pretrial punishment can take many forms. The most common examples are unreasonable or harassing restraint that creates an appearance that the service member is guilty, and onerous pretrial confinement conditions. Article 13 provides that pretrial confinement should not be, quote, more rigorous than the circumstances required to ensure the service member's presence at court, end quote. A defense motion for Article 13 credit is generally made before pleas are entered. As such, the first time this issue can be raised is once the case is referred to a court-martial. The issue of whether there is a violation of Article 13 is litigated in a pretrial motion hearing. At this hearing, the defense may call witnesses and the accused may testify concerning the nature of the pretrial confinement conditions. The defense carries the burden by preponderance of the evidence to show a violation of Article 13. If a military judge determines that a service member has been illegally punished prior to trial, she has substantial discretion to grant administrative credit, usually in the form of additional pretrial confinement credit, or even grant an outright dismissal of the charges. There is no set formula for calculating the appropriate amount of credit for unlawful pretrial punishment in violation of Article 13. The Universal Code, for example, in the United States versus Suzuki, the military judge awarded 3 days credit for every 1 day of illegal pretrial confinement. A case that is similar on facts to that of PFC Manning's is United States versus Avila. In Avila, a service member raised an Article 13 motion alleging illegal pretrial punishment based upon his pretrial confinement. During the service member's pretrial confinement, by Brig policy, and based solely on the serious nature of the pending charges, the service member was housed in a windowless cell, not allowed to communicate with other pretrial confinees, given only 1 hour of daily recreation, made to wear shackles outside of his cell, and only allowed to see visitors separated by a window. The Court of Appeals agreed with the lower court's holding that the Brigg policy of assigning all pretrial confinees facing a possible sentence of 5 or more years to maximum solitary confinement was unreasonable. The court ordered an additional 140 days of pretrial confinement credit due to the violation of Article 13. Based upon the facts of this case, the defense will file an Article 13 motion at the appropriate time. Until that time, we will continue to work through military channels and the staff judge advocate's office to remove the harsh conditions of confinement. A typical day for PFC Bradley Manning and Article 13 and PFC Bradley Manning. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Hey, we're ready to play this hour's podcast trivia. We're going to do it all 3 hours tonight. So if you want to get in on the game, dial us up, 877-996-2556. All you have to do is get the right number to the trivia question, and you win a one-year free podcast download subscription to the Malloy program. This hour, again, is sponsored by Faith Peoples, who writes, I accidentally discovered Mike while I was driving down to Florida with my newly installed satellite radio. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I had never heard anyone as real as Mike. I have been a faithful listener, podcast subscriber, and recently a chat room participator ever since. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Kathy. You have no idea how important you are to us. Mike, I know you will be embarrassed to read this, but you must do it. Faith is right. I mean, if you sponsor an hour, I have to do... No. I have to read whatever. Well, you know, I mean, if some right-winger wrote something typically right-wing, I wouldn't read it, but... All right, if you want to play podcast trivia, now! 877-996-2556. That's the number to call. All right? Aha! Uh-huh. What else we got here? Just all kinds of stuff. That's about net neutrality. We haven't gotten to that yet. That's about Social Security. Haven't got to that yet. Oh, this is kind of interesting. The New Zealand military. Yes, they have one. Damn right. And a pretty good one, too. The New Zealand military has released UFO files. This is from Wellington, New Zealand. It's from the French news agency. The New Zealand military released hundreds of previously classified reports today detailing claims of UFO sightings and alien encounters. The reports dating from 1954 to 2009 were released under Freedom of Information laws after the New Zealand Defense Force removed names and other identifying material. In about 2,000 pages of documents, members of the public, military personnel, and commercial pilots outline close encounters, mostly involving moving lights in the sky. Some of the accounts include drawings of flying saucers, descriptions of aliens wearing so-called pharaoh masks, like the Egyptian pharaoh, and alleged examples of extraterrestrial writing. Blah, 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 blah. New Zealand. Well, fancy that. Do y'all believe in UFOs? Huh? All right. It's you ready for the podcast trivia music? First of all, let's get John. You're driving near Akron, Ohio. John?
Yes, I am. Mike, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good. All right, listen to the music. Here we go.
All right.
It's time once again for podcast trivia. Get the right answer and you win a free 1-year subscription. Roy Podcast downloads, commercial free. All right, I said everything. All right, John, you ready?
I'm ready. Ready for me.
All right. This week, Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour hit the reset button on the civil rights era in his state. Which of the following did Haley Barbour say? A. The civil rights era in Mississippi was one of a struggle for justice long delayed. B. We had the citizens' councils in Yazoo City and the rest of the state had the Klan, and that's how we avoided violence. C. The Klan wore white sheets. The citizen councils wore pink underpants. D. Anybody got any Gentleman Jack handy? I'm thirsty!
Oh, God. Man, I didn't hear nothing about him. I'm going to guess and say B.
B! You're absolutely right.
Woo-hoo! Wow! Awesome.
Yeah, that's what he said.
What a moron.
He is. He said that, John. We had the citizens' councils in Yazoo City, and that's how we avoided violence. The rest of the state had the Klan. But anyway, congratulations. Stay on the line. I'm going to put or ask Kathy to get – I don't put Kathy anywhere. I ask her to get on the line. And I'm sorry. I didn't mean to – are you pissed at me now because I said – no? Good. She'll get on the line, get the pertinent information. Congratulations, John. 1-year subscription, and it's worth all of $57.60. Ow! See how easy that is to win a 1-year subscription to Malloy Podcast downloads commercial-free. The White House, of course, I'm sure you've heard, is when they say the White House, they mean the Obama administration. The Obama administration is preparing an executive order on indefinite detention that will provide periodic reviews of evidence against dozens of prisoners held at Guantanamo Bay. That's according to several administration officials. You can find this at ProPublica.org. In an ABC interview, Attorney General Eric Holder has publicly said the United States wants to, quote, neutralize the Yemen-based Muslim cleric Anwar al-Awlaki, who is said to be the first U.S. citizen added to a CIA list of targets for killing. In response to this, Bruce Fein was Associate Deputy Attorney General and General Counsel to the FCC under President Reagan. He's the author of a new book, American Empire, Before the Fall. He said today, the American Empire has pushed the due process clock back to pre-Magna Carta times. The new slogan is, quote, anything and everything for professed safety, but nothing for liberty or freedom, end quote. Marjorie Cohn is a professor at Thomas Jefferson School of Law and author of the new book, The United States and Torture, Interrogation, Incarceration, and Abuse. She said today, indefinite detention violates the law under the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution. If there is probable cause that Guantanamo detainees have committed a crime, they should be brought to trial. If not, they should be released. Targeted assassination or willful killing constitutes a grave breach of the Geneva Conventions, punishable as a war crime under the U.S. War Crimes Act, end quote. Perhaps a light begins to dawn on why the Obama administration has refused to pursue war crimes trials against the members of the Bush crime syndicate that ran this country for 8 years. To open that can of worms would then, in somebody's thinking in the Obama administration, then place them at risk. They're already at risk. They are already at risk by continuing the policies established by the Bush crime family in violation of our laws, the U.S. Constitution, international law, international treaties and agreements, the Nuremberg conclusions that came from the Nuremberg trials, and the Geneva Conventions on the treatment of prisoners captured during a time of war. I mean, son of a bitch, what's left to violate? There is nothing left to violate. Regardless of what good the Obama administration can accomplish, and with this spate of bills that have been passed in the past few days and rulings and decisions, I think a lot of stuff is flying under the radar that is going to come back and bite us in the ass. This is the ruling by the FCC the other day about so-called net neutrality is not about net neutrality. It's about net non-neutrality. There's some questions about the Food Safety Act. There are some questions about don't ask, don't tell, even though that's now been signed into law. It doesn't take effect immediately. What's the holdup? The START Treaty Agreement, that seems to perhaps have been the only thing to get through the legislative process and into law that hasn't been totally tampered with. And again, I don't know. Do you know what these recent bill signings, what they really constitute? I hate to take that attitude, but I have been lied to by every single president since Lyndon Johnson. Well, since Kennedy. I mean, the Kennedy campaign in 1960 screamed and bleated and yelped about a missile gap. You have to be over a certain age to remember that. But there was a missile gap between us and the Russians, and Kennedy was going to close the missile gap. It wasn't Nixon that talked about the missile gap. It was Kennedy. And Kennedy's point was the missile gap had developed after 8 years of Dwight Eisenhower. Jesus, I get tired of this, don't you? We'll be right back.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost.
Hey, conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Faith. Faith Peoples. And I have to read this again because Faith says I have to do it. I accidentally discovered Mike while I was driving down to Florida with my newly installed satellite radio. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I'd never heard anyone as real as Mike. I've been a faithful listener, podcast subscriber, and recently a chat room participator ever since. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Kathy. You have no idea how important you are to us. Faith Peoples. Thank you, Faith. Nora writes, Mike, tyranny in Private Manning is the subject line. She writes, tyrants don't want progressives to ever enjoy the holidays. If it isn't attacking Gaza It's leaving 99ers without an urn to urinate in, or having us pull the covers over our sugar plum dreaming heads, knowing that Private Bradley Manning is sleeping in a cold cell in his shorts. Do we have a government, government meaning by now, government managers and bureaucrats empowered by the people to fulfill the needs of the community of individuals? Do we have such a government, or do we have tyranny? Government would pursue justice through law. Tyranny twists and perverts law and denies justice and puts citizens in open-ended detention without recourse or legal charges. A government levies taxes to provide for the common good. A tyranny is nothing but a tax money laundering operation that puts the citizens' tax monies in the Gucci wallets of war profiteers, financial and banking profiteers, and black budgets for their personal, insatiable, greedy glee. I decree, if only one citizen is abused, robbed of dignity, tortured via the tyrannical behavior of U.S. officials, it means every single one of us has been abused. Long overdue is a nationwide display of solidarity behind those abused by the Bushes and Obamas and Pinochets and the rest. Cheers, Nora. How do you, as an American citizen, I mean, how do you justify open-ended detention without charges against the people at Guantanamo who no one in the United States government has a clue as to who those people are, what they are guilty or not guilty of, and now in order to keep them in complete violation of the U.S. Constitution, if the Constitution is violated by the government, do we still have a Constitution? And I'm not talking about this teabagger, whiny-ass crap about health care reform. I'm talking about obvious and clear-cut violations of the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Eighth Amendment, and on and on and on. Violations of international law, violations of international treaties and agreements. If this is where we live, if the Bush crime family, which was expected to do this because it was neo-Nazi, but the Obama administration, which for a lot of people was not expected to do this, do we have government, as Nora questions, or do we have tyranny? How do we, well, obviously we have tyranny, but it's focused tyranny. And that's the mind, the horrible part of this, because it's focused tyranny, we don't get it. I mean, I'm not in prison being held without charge, indeterminate detention, neither are you. So it's just, I don't know, kind of like, is it really happening? Is this really tyranny, or is this just talk on talk radio? What do you call it? What do you call it when, as Nora points out, one person is held like this? You know, I used the example the other night of the work of Amnesty International in sending letters to the governments that were holding prisoners of conscience, political prisoners. Bradley Manning is nothing more, nothing less than a political prisoner. And we have other political prisoners in our federal penal system. They're there. But take a 23-year-old Army PFC who witnessed conversations, events, and videotapes that were in violation of the oath of office that he, or the oath of allegiance that he took to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States of America, up to and including the sacrificing of his own life. And so he did what someone of conscience would do. We assume Bradley Manning did it. We don't know. Julian Assange, in an interview with on Dylan Radigan's program today, said that in this one-on-one interview with Cenk Uygur, is it Uygur? Is that how you pronounce his last name? Who was substituting for Dylan Radigan today? In the one-on-one interview, Assange made it very clear. Julian Assange made it very clear that he had no idea. He literally did not have an idea as to how the material that he released, the first group, how it came to him. He knew how it got there, but he didn't know who released it. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The Malloy program, and this hour is sponsored by the supporters of the Head On Radio Network with Bob Kincaid. If you're seeking honest and unlimited time to engage in personal dialogue that will help you process the madness that surrounds us, then Bob Kincaid is the one to call. You can stream the Head On Radio Network Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Or is it .org? You'll find it. So this hour is sponsored by the supporters of the Head On Radio Network and Bob Kincaid. Thank you, folks. I appreciate that. Where are we? A lot of things were passed. The Senate today passed the 9/11 health bill, so-called. It's a bill to cover the cost of medical care for rescue workers and others who got sick from breathing the toxic fumes, dust, and smoke that was a direct result of the criminal incompetence of the Bush crime family. They allowed this attack to occur in order to put into effect the neo-fascist policies that immediately followed on the heels of that attack. The Bush crime family had no interest in taking care of the people who were actually breathing in other people's DNA that day. That dust, the dust we saw, what do you think that was? What do you think was included in that? But the Bush crime family, the only use they had for what occurred at Ground Zero was photo ops. So George could use that and the deck of an aircraft carrier to strut around pretending he was a fully formed adult male, when in fact he was a drunk son of a bitch who never progressed beyond the age of about 22. But I digress. The Senate today approved a bill to cover the cost of medical care for rescue workers and others who got sick from breathing that garbage. The vote passed by unanimous consent, and it came soon after a deal was reached between conservative Republicans and Senator Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand. The New York Democrats agreed to changes demanded by the conservative lawmakers, who raised concerns about the measure's cost and prevented the bill from advancing in the Senate. After drawing criticism in recent days, the Republican senators backed down. You know, there's a lesson there, and I do not understand why Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama haven't learned that lesson, didn't learn it in elementary school. When you are confronted with a half-witted bully on the school playground, and he threatens to beat you up, and it's 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100, it's a male. You kick him in the balls is what you do. You don't stand there and listen to his threats. You don't become intimidated. You don't run to the principal or down the hall to the boys' room to pee. When you are threatened by a bully and it's a male, you kick him in the balls, and you kick him hard, and you kick him so severely that he can't breathe. And you know what? It never happens again. But Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama apparently didn't go to the same sort of elementary public school that I went to. And so they have spent 2 years, and 2 years before that, backing down again and again and again. But when it became known that these so-called conservative Republicans, they're not conservative, they're not Republicans, they are vicious sons of bitches who are there to do the bidding of capitalist America. They are not lawmakers. They are not public servants. They are thugs. They are punks and thugs. When it became clear that the tactics of the punks and the thugs were being made public, that the punks and the thugs, all in the Republican Party, we're talking about the cost. Nobody talked about the cost when the Bush crime family engineered attack on this country occurred in the immediate aftermath. There was no talk then, was there, you rotten bastard Republicans? You guys didn't sit around back then and say, oh, goddamn, look at the buildings come down. Woo! You know, there could be an awful lot of people die there today. What? Let me see. 3,000, 4,000? Yep, they'll be dead. Now let's see. We got to clean the mess up. There's going to be a lot of people breathing this crap, going to get sick and die. We'll have to take care of them, right? We definitely will. I hate Republicans. I hate anyone who represents Republican corrupt ideas and belief system. They turn my stomach. I don't believe I live in the same country with these people. When confronted with public awareness of what they were doing where it concerned the 9/11 health care bill, these slimy bastards backed down, and the bill passed by unanimous consent. Under the new agreement, the bill provides $4.3 billion over 5 years for health coverage to the 9/11 workers instead of the original $7.4 billion over 8 years. You got to wonder about that, don't you? In a joint statement issued this afternoon, Senator Schumer and Gillibrand called the deal a, quote, Christmas miracle, end quote. Christmas miracle. Let's hope they were referring to these filthy Republicans, these disgusting anti-American Republicans who allowed themselves the shame of not voting individually and just agreeing by unanimous consent. They called it a Christmas miracle. I think Senators Schumer and Gillibrand are a little bit heavy on the holiday rhetoric, don't you think? It wasn't a Christmas miracle. It was justice. Jesus Christ. It was just simple, basic justice. That's all. Not a miracle, senators. Justice. Their statement said, quote, over the last 24 hours, our Republican colleagues Why would you call somebody whose lives are lived in right wing swill and garbage and refuse? Why would you call them colleagues? Our Republican colleagues have negotiated in good faith to forge a workable final package that will protect the health of the men and women who selflessly answered our nation's call in her hour of greatest need. This has been a long process, but we are now on the cusp of the victory these heroes deserve. Tom Coburn, the pig Republican from Oklahoma, said it is not compassionate to help one group, the 9/11 people, while robbing future generations of opportunity, end quote. You rancid son of a bitch. You filthy, filthy human being, Coburn. You sat there on your well-padded, wealthy ass and voted to hand off to the rich people in this country $850 billion for nothing. For doing nothing. And you had the audacity to say it is not compassionate to help one group while robbing future generations of opportunity. Is that what you're saying? The stinking $4.3 billion over 5 years is robbing future generations of opportunity? You half-witted bastard. Go to the break music, Kathy, before I say something that cost me my license.
Jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Let's go. 21 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by the supporters of the Head On Radio Network with Bob Kincaid. Excuse me, if you're looking for honest and unlimited time to engage in personal dialogue that will help you process the madness that surrounds us, then Bob Kincaid is the one to call. You can stream the Head On Radio Network Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thanks, guys and gals, for the sponsorship. You should listen to Kincaid. You really should. It's a good show. Oh, my goodness. Look who's here. Blue is calling, this time from a Chilean island. Which one?
Buenas noches, Miguelito. And happy solstice as well.
Yeah, same.
And also, also before I go any further, thanks very much for the Diana crawl during the bumpers.
Sure.
My wife is sitting 10 feet away, so I've got to be careful what I say. But that's the only woman I'd be tempted to be unfaithful with. So thanks very much for that.
Yeah, you're more than welcome, Blue. I aim to please.
And I was telling Kath, I heard through the grapevine, I didn't hear it myself, but heard through the grapevine that my name was taken in vain a week or so ago.
It probably was. You
By some bloke named Tim in Los Angeles, I think, criticizing my condemnation of American so-called liberals.
Yeah. Well, he was trying to make sure you drew a distinction between liberals, which, while the term is still valid and the definition is still workable, so many people who identify themselves as liberals are anything but. What Tim's point was, you've got to separate progressives from liberals at this point.
Well, the surprising part of it was that he claimed to be insulted by my remarks, and I was, the only reason I was surprised by that, I didn't think anyone in L.A. was clever enough to be insulted by a yobbo like me. But I suppose
well,
I was
just,
wrong about it.
Now you just want to take on the whole city, right?
But, yeah, we're sitting here. It's a wonderful evening here. We're sitting in a house called a Palafito, and it's a house built on stilts out over the lagoon in this city of Castro.
Yeah.
Small city on the island here of Chiloé. And my friends Isabel and Joaquin. Joaquin is a great fan of Western movies, so we've just watched a picture called She Wore a Yellow Ribbon. Now, this is a bit surreal, I know, but it's a John...
Yeah, I saw that when I was a kid.
It's a wonderful film, actually. It's not very politically correct, of course, because it's got the United States cavalry running around slaughtering Indians.
That's an ancient movie. My God, that must have come out in the mid-50s.
Well, 1949, I think, but it's a wonderful film, and I was forced to admit, after watching it, I hadn't seen it, I suppose I did when I was a child, but I was forced to admit that, John Wayne was not a bad actor at all when he had a good director like John Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a beautiful film. You've got a sort of, excuse me, something went down the wrong way. We've got some wonderful Chilean wines here, Mike. It's a shame you can't be here to taste them.
Yeah, it is. It truly is.
But maybe next year. The other reason I called was that along the same lines, I wanted to congratulate Daniel Ellsberg, who I think is going to be 80 years old this year, and Ray McGovern, and he's no youngster either, as I've heard.
Right.
And people like Medea Benjamin and Cindy Sheehan, I think, also was there. And my question for Tim, perhaps he was there, I don't know, and perhaps this bloke was there. But my question for Tim was, where were the rest of you? There was something like 300 people there, I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
There should have been 500,000 there.
Well, sure there should have.
And as far as...
But don't forget what Mao said, the longest journey begins with a single step.
Either
he said that or Julius Caesar said it, or Alexander the Great. I'm not sure which, but...
Well, as far as Obama's concerned, I hope this is put paid to the illusions that the American liberals have had about this drongo in the White House. But he didn't have the courtesy or the courage or the decency to come down to the fence, because all these people were doing was standing there, as far as I can tell, from what I've seen and heard.
That was it.
But this drongo didn't have the decency to come down to the fence and talk to them. I mean, Kennedy did that when they were demonstrating against him. They were demonstrating against Kennedy after the invasion of Cuba, or the abortive invasion of Cuba. And the demonstrators came down to the White House, and Kennedy came out and talked to them.
Hey, hold on a second. Hold on. I got to do some commercials. Stay right there, Blue. We'll come back and pick up the conversation. This is the Malloy Program. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Well, way up north where the air gets cold, there's a tale about Christmas that you've all been told. And a real famous cat all dressed up in red. And he spends the whole year working out in his sled. It's the little Saint Nick.
Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by the supporters of the Head On Radio Network with Bob Kincaid. If you're seeking honest and unlimited time to engage in personal dialogue that will help you process the madness that surrounds us, then Bob Kincaid is the one to call. Stream the Head On Radio Network Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We're talking with Blue, who is on an island off the coast of the coast of Chile.
Yeah, Mike.
All right, where are we?
Well, we've switched. They've just brought glasses of Pisco around. And I don't know whether you're familiar with Pisco, but you should be if you're not.
I'm not.
Well, it's a Peruvian brandy. And this stuff is amazing, Mike. I mean, a couple of these and you feel as though your head, your trunk, and your legs are moving in three separate directions. and whatever you're worried about, it all fades away.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic stuff, so I've got to be careful here. But it's a beautiful night.
Yeah.
And actually, we have the illusion that we're sitting out in the middle of the lagoon because we've got an enormous plate glass window. We're looking out towards the mainland. And there are fishing boats out there, and they've got their lights on. It's just fantastic. And I'm looking forward, I think it's tomorrow night, your time. It'll be sometime in the afternoon. No, wait a minute, we're going to be here. Isn't that right? We're going to be here? Yeah, we'll be here. We'll still be here. So it should be approximately the same time that you're going to be doing the your Christmas show, is it?
The holiday. Well, we don't call it Christmas show anymore. We now call it
Solstice
celebration. Yeah. Oh, hey, listen.
Well, I'm interested. Go ahead. Yeah.
I have an email here for you from Tim.
All right.
In L.A., Mike. Where was I? Why wasn't I at the fence? Two reasons. One, I can't afford to go there. If I could, I'd be there in a heartbeat. Two, is a protest. A protest at some sort of ground zero when I can do my protest at home? Haven't you heard of Anonymous, also known as Operation Payback? Blue, we're not as wealthy as you, so I do my work on some free Wi-Fi.
That's a cut below the belt, Mike, because I'm very far from being wealthy.
Well, he just...
All right, look, good on... It's solstice time. Good on you, Tim, you know. I'll send you to a drink. You come to Queensland, come to Toowoomba, I'll send you to a drink and we can hash it out, you know, all of this out between the two of us. But the point I was trying to make was I want to be sure I listen to the program that you're going to have Molly reading to you, right? Your daughter's going to be reading to you.
She is
so
indeed.
When is that going to be?
9:30 Eastern time tomorrow.
Zulu time, Mike.
I can't. Someone can do that for you. I don't know what.
Well, it'll be the same time because we're going to be here, so it'll be the same time that we're listening to you now.
There you go.
But
we're in the second hour of the program right now. You'll have to tune in the first hour because she's got to go to bed.
All right.
You know, she's only six. Plus, you know, you can go to Ustream.com, and you can watch her.
I know, but it depends on how much I've had to drink, Mike. When I do that, you know, when I try to do that.
That's true.
Now, the other thing is I understand that you're going to be going, you and your lovely wife.
Kathy.
And Kathy, I know. And Molly, is Molly going on the cruise as well?
She is indeed.
All right. So you're going to be going on this cruise with Mike Farrell, right?
Mike Farrell and who else, Kathy? A whole bunch of progressives. Not liberals, but progressives.
All right, what you've got to do is you've got to say to Mike Farrell, greetings from Blue, the crazy Australian that, you know, you met at Universal City, I think it was about 25 years ago. We went on a tour out there and met Alan Alda, and, God, it must have been longer than that.
How long ago
was that? Anyway, he obviously won't remember, but tell him anyway.
I'll do it.
Greetings from Blue.
All right, Blue, listen, I want you to have a good evening and listen tomorrow night. I've got to move on, okay?
All right.
All right, pal. Thank you very much for checking in. Blue from an island off the coast of Chile. He always gets a lot of emails to come in here. from Jude Blue. There were many who stood, yet not necessarily in D.C., aligning with those who chained themselves to the fence. Never underestimate the power of one. I found myself standing across an intersection with a veteran for peace. He, too, was aligning with others. Never, Blue, assume because it may not make the news that we are silent. We are here. Jude. Okay. Tell Blue about the cruise. What? All right. Well, he apparently knows about it. Nothing like an Aussie to stir up an American audience, right? And we have the, now coming back after the next break. We're going to do another podcast trivia. I want to get three of them in this evening. So after the next break, if you're on hold and you want to talk about the topic that you told Kathy, that's great, but we're also going to do podcast trivia before we get into the substance of your phone call. We have one open line if you want to give it a shot, 877-996-2556. Email here from the Foxhole Atheist. Judging from actions, this administration, the Obama administration, will come into possession of Julian Assange one way or another. Assassination is probably viewed as a last resort, as there is no legitimate use to have custody of Assange. What will happen is Assange will be, quote, interrogated, end quote, until he admits a connection to PFC Manning. After providing testimony against Manning, Assange will be released to Australia with a gag order to not speak with anyone about the incident. This is just a heads up so we don't all act surprised when it happens. So to sum up, Manning will be convicted of treason and never see the light of day again. Assange will be killed or broken. Julian Assange does not impress me, the Foxhole Atheist, as somebody who would rat out someone, even if he knew who his source was. I believe what I saw on MSNBC today, the live interview on the Rattigan program, that Assange is not aware of who it was who released the video to him, who released the documents from 2 and 3 years ago regarding Iraq. We know damn well that it was not PFC Manning who has released subsequent documents, do we not? The documents regarding Afghanistan and the huge trove of State Department emails or cables, I should say, that has been released. And the statement now by Julian Assange that he also has information that he will be releasing. Memos and cables and inter-corporation communications regarding this filthy, disgusting banking system in the United States. Is PFC Manning guilty of all that? PFC Manning, keep in mind, has not been charged. He is being held in a situation designed specifically to break him into pieces. The same thing that happened to Jose Padilla, and I know his name should be pronounced Padilla, but it's my understanding that his family said it's pronounced Padilla. So no emails, please, with the correct pronunciation. The family says it's Padilla. Who are we to argue? And regarding standing up to the bullies that some of the members of the Democratic caucus in the Congress seems to have done, Bruce Enberg writes, the sudden evolution of the Senate Democrats to a vertebrate species is a backlash to the Citizens United-funded slaughter of the Blue Dog Democrats in the last election. The remaining Democrats now realize that going along and getting along will only result in their extinction. Time to grow some teeth. Well, we'll see. It'd be nice to. Assume that that's the truth, that the remaining Democrats have finally come out of the ether and realized that their patrons in capitalist America will cut their throats given a slightest chance, and their so-called colleagues in the House and the Senate will not only cut their throats, but will stand over their bodies and giggle and laugh while they bleed to death. So, Senate and House Democrats, you better grow a pair. Or, if you're female, you better... Oh, you can grow a pair, too. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Ho, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you. Kiss her.
On Christmas morn, they sing along just like we.
It's time once again for podcast trivia brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Our winner tonight, winners tonight will receive a free one-year podcast download subscription, commercial free. All you have to do is get the right answer to our question. All right, let's see if we can give away another one. Cameron is in Swan Quarter, North Carolina. Hey, Cameron.
Hey, how you doing tonight, Mike?
I'm all right. You ready to do this?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Here's your question. Recently, a female moose was slaughtered in Alaska in order to satisfy the bloodlust of which well-known psychopath? Was it A, Sarah Palin, B, Dick Cheney, C, Glenn Beck, or D, Benjamin Netanyahu?
That would be A, Sarah Palin.
That would be A, Sarah Palin. You know, I really felt sorry for that moose. I don't know if you saw that video, but it looked like that moose that somebody had shot it up a little bit of Demerol before it was turned loose out there. I have, I've gone hunting. I've gone big game hunting. I've never bagged anything that big, but I have watched. And a moose doesn't do that, or whatever the hell that was, an elk. I guess it was a moose. It doesn't just stand there while you you talk to your husband, you talk to your hunting guide. You switch rifles because this one has, a higher caliber slug in it. And the moose just stands there?
Caribou.
Or caribou, whatever the hell it was. I mean, I don't get that, Cameron.
are they sure it wasn't Levi?
Well, it could have been. Could have been. All right, Cameron, hold on a second. Kathy will get the pertinent information here. Winner two. We're still going to give away one more podcast subscription tonight, so stick around. This hour is sponsored by the supporters of the Head On Radio Network with Bob Kincaid. If you're seeking honest and unlimited time to engage in personal dialogue that will help you process the madness that surrounds us, then Bob Kincaid is the one to call. You can stream the Head On Radio Network Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Brandon is in Hamilton, Ohio. Hello, Brandon.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm all right.
I just want to call and ask you a question real quick because I used to be a right winger until I saw the light, and basically what got me to see the light was I visited a little country, South Korea, because that's where my ex-girlfriend was from.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw her, she went to the doctor and she had a CAT scan done and she had her blood pressure tested and she had all kinds of different tests done for only $3. And, mm-hmm. I was started wondering why here in this country is the wealthiest nation in the world. Why do we let so many people die that don't have health insurance?
Because
and I came
we,
back here.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I came back here to my dad, and I started, you know, talking about universal health insurance and how, you know, I think it would be okay to raise taxes to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, who is he's a Republican, but he started saying, well, that's fine over there, but we can't really trust the government that we have here to actually take care of the money. And what's sad is I actually see where he's coming from because, I mean, we're wasting money on lots of different things, especially on what they call defense, but I call offense.
Right.
Like giving $7 million a day away to Israel for military funding. And most of the countries that we're in right now overseas, we don't even need to be in.
Well,
so my question is,
yeah, go ahead.
How do I sell these things on my dad when I don't even know if we have a government that we can really trust to
well,
do those things?
Well, let me ask you something. How old is your dad?
He's just turned 50.
Oh, he's only 50.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Well, he must have been, you must be younger than you sound.
25.
What, all right, do you have living grandparents?
Yes.
Okay. Your grandparents.
All progressive.
Well, they must be receiving Social Security.
Yes.
They also must be on Medicare.
Yes.
Okay. Ask your dad if he feels that his parents, I'm assuming this is his parents and not your mom's parents, maybe all four if they're all living, but ask your dad if he feels or if his parents feel and he feels secure that his parents have medical insurance that is provided by the government, that's Medicare, and a retirement insurance program that is administered by, now when I say provided by the government, I mean administered by the government because people pay into Medicare, people pay into the Social Security Trust Fund. And if your dad says, well, yeah, those programs, then I would think that explaining to him that a public health system would only be, you could call it Medicare for everybody, it would just be an expansion, and that everybody would contribute to it. The way it stands now, not everybody contributes all the way up the income scale to Medicare. It only goes up, I think, if you make over $110,000, your contributions stop at $110,000. In other words, if you make $110,000, you pay as much into Social Security as somebody who makes $110 million. Now, that to me, that doesn't make any sense. But I think your dad, if you explain to him, you know, or not explain, but just point out to him, look, Grandma and Grandpa get this. Why do you think it's not safe for your parents, Dad? And see what his answer is.
Yeah, and it's honestly, eventually it's not going to be safe if all these Republicans keep choking it off.
Well, I think, you know, it's referred to often, Brandon, as the third rail in the political system here. I don't know that it is so much anymore because corporate America is taking over more and more and more. But as long as there are millions, tens of millions of people in this country who use Social Security, and it's not just retirees, Social Security has many, many different programs for many, many different people. Disability programs for children whose parents are dead, Social Security for people with disabilities, all sorts of things. And I just don't think that Social Security Trust Fund is going to be touched by any politician that wants to continue as a politician. Brandon, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate your call. I hope you call again. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Malloy Program. Thanks for tuning in. This hour is sponsored by Margaret Hittinger. And she's sponsoring us for all the nurses at Downey Regional Hospital. We stayed when they took our 10% away. We stayed when this hospital went into bankruptcy. Why? Just because we were the nurses who cared more than this hospital did. We give this to you because all of us care about free speech. It has been lost here for such a long time. We, all the nurses in the barrio, love you, Mike Malloy. Well, isn't that sweet? Well, thank you, Margaret. This is from for all the nurses at Downey Regional Hospital. Margaret is our sponsor this third hour of the program tonight. I appreciate it. Don't forget, tomorrow night is the Malloy Winter Holiday Program. I'm going to read to you, not from the Book of Luke, something that a lot of you will be very, very, very familiar with. It's a great story. And Molly is going to be here live on Ustream. It's pretty dangerous, but we're going to do it anyway. She's going to read The Night Before Christmas. And then we have The Nightmare Before Christmas, the singing that we have done every year now for about a decade. And for people who worry that it's somebody with a speech impediment, let me assure you that it is not. Got an interesting email here I want to share with you. This is from Kay Petrini, our education correspondent in San Francisco. She writes, "Hi, Mike. On last night's show, you talked about the End Times group that is predicting Jesus' return for May 21st, 2011. You asked what they are going to do when May 22nd, 2011 rolls around. I have some idea of what their strategy will be because I grew up in a fundamentalistic end times church, the new apostolic church, whose core teaching was the literal return of Jesus Christ. This was emphasized so strongly that, for example, when we would leave a church service or other church function, we would often say, 'See you here next time if the Lord doesn't return first.' We always sang a second verse to the Happy Birthday song. 'Till the Lord comes again, till the Lord comes again, God bless you and keep you, till the Lord comes again.' And people who belonged to this church during its heyday in the 50s and 60s were discouraged from going to college or pursuing any profession that would compete with their volunteer work in the church. The rationale was, 'You don't need that. Jesus is coming back any minute.' I could go on, but you get the idea. From its founding in Europe during the millennialist craze of the mid-19th century, the new apostolic church had taught that although Jesus' return was imminent, no one knows the hour or the day. But in 1951, the church's supreme leader, a man by the name of J.G. Bischoff, made the timing of that event much more specific when he announced, 'The Lord will return in my lifetime.' Throughout the 1950s, the core doctrine of the church became this prophecy. Ministers and members who questioned or refused to accept it were promptly excommunicated. And then came July 6, 1960, the day that J.G. Bischoff died. My mother was 21 years old and remembers the panic and anxiety-ridden faces she saw as she arrived at church that morning. She, like most of my family, has long since left the fold. Anyway, people were despondent, some were angry, many were inconsolable and seemingly in danger of losing their minds. One would think, well, that's the end of that, right? But the church survived, and it continues to exist today. So how did the church recover from having its leader's prophecy prove false? Ministers told the faithful that God's ways are not our ways. They said that for some unknown reason, God changed his mind. Never mind what the Bible says about that. They taught the flock that this is God's way of testing your faithfulness to this church. Satan would love nothing more than to see you fall in your faith. They also used the ultimate weapon, fear. They expounded on the consequences of being left behind when Jesus finally did return to take quote, his chosen people, end quote. And over the decades, the Memory Hall has solved this public relations nightmare for them. If you ask most members of that church nowadays, they have no idea that this ever occurred. So, Kay writes, I would guess that on May 22nd, 2011, there will be stricken faces among Harold Camping's group down there in Nashville. The flock will be despondent and will feel utterly lost. But then, like any false prophet, Mr. Camping will regroup and do some damage control along the lines of what happened in my former church. And 50 years from now, no one will remember Harold Camping's false prophecy, and either his group or another one will be plastering the new date of Jesus' return on billboards around Nashville. Total insanity. Kay. Yeah, I had some experiences in that sort of church. Certainly not New Apostolic, but Southern Baptist Convention style Baptist church. Scary stuff. Very scary. Very, very scary. Something else. The Senate passed an arms control treaty with Russia. The final vote was 71 to 26. Oh, my. How did that happen? The vote, 71 to 26, now sends the treaty known as New START. START being Strategic Arms Limitation Talks, I guess, to Obama for a signature. And according to the New York Times, cements what is probably the most tangible foreign policy achievement of Mr. Obama's 2 years in office. 13 Republicans joined a unanimous Democratic caucus to vote in favor, exceeding the two-thirds majority required by the Constitution. Yeah, they had to have 67 votes. They got 71. Woohoo! The treaty had assumed such symbolic importance for Mr. Obama's presidency that Vice President Biden took the rare step of presiding personally over the vote in his role as president of the Senate. Now, the treaty, and what I mentioned to Blue a few minutes ago, the longest step, the longest journey begins with a single step. The treaty obliges each country to have no more than 1,550 strategic warheads and 700 launchers deployed within 7 years. And it provides for a resumption of on-site inspections, which halted when the original START treaty expired last year. It's the first arms treaty with Russia in 8 years, and the first that a Democratic president has both signed and pushed through the Senate. Now, this treaty is going to make smaller reductions in deployed weapons than its predecessors did. The treaty took on outsized importance in recent weeks because both political parties here invested it with greater meaning and turn the ratification debate into a proxy fight over national security in the 21st century. Yada, yada, yada. We can hope. I mean, like I said, my generation and subsequent, starting with my generation and the ones that have come since, which would be about another two or three, we have grown up and lived our entire lives under the threat. You talk about Jesus coming back. We've been living under the threat of instant nuclear annihilation for the past half century or more. Instant nuclear. Hello. Instant nuclear annihilation. That would be as quick as the arrival. You can bring it up a little bit. As quick as the arrival of Jesus. You know, the blinking of an eye, the Bible says. How long do you think it takes from the time of the nuclear explosion, if you happen to be in the affected area, until the time you are turned into atoms?
Me and my chums. eyes. They know that Santa's on.
This hour is sponsored by Margaret Hittinger, who writes, "For all the nurses at Downey Regional Hospital, we stayed when they took our 10% away. We stayed when this hospital went into bankruptcy. Why? Just because we were the nurses who cared more than this hospital did. We give this to you because all of us care about free speech. It has been lost here for such a long time. We, all the nurses in the barrio, love you, Mike Malloy." Ooh. Thank you very much, guys and gals. I appreciate that. Margaret and the nurses at Downey Regional are the sponsors of this hour. After the next break, podcast trivia. For the third time tonight, we're going to give away one more free subscription to Malloy Podcast Downloads. So be here for that. Ron is in Prescott, Arizona. Hello, Ron.
Good evening, Mike. You were talking about Harold Camping.
Yes.
This guy's an absolute total nutcase.
This is the religious person in Nashville who has decided to put up billboards all over the country that Jesus is returning May the 21st, right?
Right. Camping came up with a prediction back in 1994. Do you remember that?
I do not.
Yeah, he predicted the end of the world on September 6, 1994. And I called into his program. He's got a talk show like yours.
Oh, no.
And I called into him many, many times, and I rebuked him. Well, I call him once a month.
Yeah.
I rebuke him for being an idiot.
Yeah.
But I wrote a book about this nonsense last year. And you're very familiar with the Bible, because I can tell by the words you use and so forth. So you know what imminent means. And this idea that the rapture can take place at any time is not in the Bible. And I prove that in my book. But the major preachers out there today, the Protestant preachers who believe in this, they all teach it. And they live and die by it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say, no, it's not right, they go ballistic on you.
Well, and it's very clear why. They have so much invested in this. Don't forget, the without the resurrection of their living God, without, first of all, the death of their living God, and then the resurrection of their living God, there's no Christianity. Christianity is nothing if it's only the birth. It's nothing if it's only the death. It's just one more person wandering around the Middle East a couple thousand years ago who spouted a bunch of stuff that people back then thought was profound. The only thing that gives Christianity its cachet is the fact that it, like so many religions, is allegedly a triumphant movement over death. So when they talk about Jesus returning, that's supposed to be the manifestation. You know, even though a couple of his disciples thought they saw him, even though Mary Magdalene claimed she saw him, you know, what the Christians need is to believe that this person, if he really lived, is going to come back from the dead. Otherwise, their religion is as hollow as their minds. There's nothing.
Well, that's true.
There's nothing
that's
there.
That's true, Mike.
I mean, without the resurrection, there's no Christianity.
No. That's true, and that's what the Bible actually says, is that without the resurrection, your faith is worthless. But here's the thing, though. The preachers who teach this pre-trib, any moment rapture, they use it to beat their congregation over the head.
Oh, sure.
To keep them in line, so they keep giving them money and they keep bringing other people in and keep growing the churches so they can be multimillionaires and famous and, you know, fly around the world in private jets and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I show in my book, which, it's, you know, totally wipes these guys out, is the rapture is not imminent, but death is imminent. Because anyone can die at any moment.
Well, amen.
And that's what these guys, if they want to preach something that's real, they ought to get up in the pulpits instead of saying the Lord can come back today or tonight or right now while I'm preaching, they should get up in the pulpit and say, you can die right now and you may wake up in hell if you don't believe in Jesus Christ. That's what they should be saying.
Well, that's true, except for one very salient fact. The whole thing is mythological claptrap. And it never fails to amaze me how so many people are willing to buy into this nonsense. I think what and Ron, thank you. Appreciate you checking in. I think what a lot of religious cultism is really sublimated sex, sexual desire. You show me a hellfire and brimstone preacher, and I'll show you a congregation that really wants to sleep with him, the men and the women. But they have to sublimate that. They have to change that into religious fervor. Otherwise, oh, Lord, you mean I want to sleep with the minister? Ah! We'll be right back.
Let every heart prepare him room. Heaven and nature sing. Heaven and nature.
Arm yourself with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. And guess what? Oh, no!
Whee!
It's time once again for podcast trivia here on the Malloy Program, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. All you have to do is get the correct answer to the trivia question. You win a one-year subscription to Malloy Show podcasts, commercial-free downloads, that is. All right, let's cut the music, Maestro. Jim is in Santa Barbara. Hey, Jim, you ready to play this?
Yes, I'm ready.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure. All right, here we go, Jim. President Obama assigned a bill regarding legal rights for people who are gay. What did the bill state? A, that gay folk now have the right to a legal marriage, same as gay folk. B, the gay folk now have the right to die for the country's aggressive foreign policy, but do not have the right to a legal marriage. C, that gay folk can only get a legal marriage if it's conducted during a firefight in one of our many wars. D, the gay folk can join the military only if they promise not to redecorate the barracks where they're stationed. Or E, none of the above.
I'll pick B.
No, the gay folk now have the right to die for the country's aggressive foreign policy, but do not have the right to legal marriage. That's not really in the bill. The not have the right to a legal marriage is not really in the bill. Well, what's that noise, Kathy?
What? Well, see, I think he ought to get it.
Why?
Well, first off, he's called four times. Secondly, other than that, it's Christmas, and see, that's a confusing question, Mike, because
wait a minute.
The bill doesn't mention marriage, but it does say that they have the right to go serve and die in the illegal.
Well, now just hold on a damn minute.
I don't
here.
I like the question.
Just hold on a damn minute here. All right, Jim, I'm not sure what I should do here. The producer of the program is telling me to go ahead and award this
I accidentally hung up on him earlier, so he deserves a podcast.
Is that true, Jim?
Yes, it's true.
She did hang up on you.
Yeah.
And that's a damn confusing question.
What's confusing? Do you think this question was confusing, Jim?
Yes, Jim. Well, it was confusing.
All right, I'll tell you what, Jim. This is your fourth time trying. You got it!
So you're going to give it to me?
Yes!
Okay, that's very nice of you.
Yes, well, you know, she who must be obeyed interrupts the program and says that the question was confusing and that...
She who controls the cookie dough.
See, she that controls the switches and everything. All right, Jim, yes, you have won. Now, stay on the line while I put you on hold. Kathy, we'll get the pertinent information.
All right, I want you to ask that question again to the audience.
All right.
And see, take a poll. Who would get that right? That's confusing. You got two different gay rights issues mixed in there together.
Well, that was the point.
But there's no bill that combines these.
I mean, how insane is it to pass a law that says gay people can now go die for a country that refuses to allow them to get married?
I heard Hal Sparks filling in for Stephanie Miller today say it's sort of insane, like, you know, it's legal to pose naked at 18, but you can't buy the porn until you're 21. I know, it's crazy.
Are you still there, Jim?
Yeah.
Okay, don't hang up. I'm going to put you on hold, all right? Thanks, Jim, and congratulations. Stay there. Kathy will get... Yeah, you know, my point with the question was the obvious insanity here. Now, I realize it is a landmark in human rights in this country. Most countries that still maintain armies and death machines and believe in killing and blowing stuff up and destroying things, you know, civilized countries, allow people whose orientation is hetero or homo to serve in their militaries for a very simple, obvious reason. Equal rights? I think not. More bodies? I think. Now, it may come under the heading of equal rights, human rights. And I know people make the comparison to the denial of African Americans the right to serve in the military. And when they were finally allowed to serve in the military, they were in segregated units until Harry Truman put a stop to that with an executive order. I believe it was an executive order, wasn't it? I mean, he didn't wait for any goddamn Congress with all the rednecks that were in the Congress in the 50s to agree on something. He just said, this is the way it's going to be. If you don't like it, kiss my Missouri butt. It was that simple, I think. So the purpose of that particular question, for me anyway, was to point out the massive insanity of a society that systematically, deliberately, and with malice aforethought, based on religious bullhockey, says to people who happen to be gay, oh, well, no, wait a minute, you can't get married. You can't get married. Because, you see, if we allow gay people to get married, a hetero marriage somewhere will fall into ruin. It's kind of like every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings. This is kind of a play on that. Every time a gay couple were to get married, a straight couple would have to get divorced. That's what these right-wing rabid snake handlers want everyone to believe, and they have prevailed. So, big effort, big push, all the way back to 1993 when the Clinton administration enacted this hideous, childlike-sounding playground, get lost, go home, your mama sucks eggs kind of thing. Don't ask, don't tell. Aren't we mature? Don't ask, don't tell. Let's all pretend. Now go kill something. So I have a hard time with this. I really do. I understand the incremental acquisition of human rights You know, I mean, we live in the United States of America. We live in a capitalist society. We live in a society that started out denying representation to everybody except white male landowners. So, okay, even though, you know, how many of those founding fathers, so to speak, were homosexual? And who wants to find out anyway at this late date? But the point is, to me, and I'm probably pissing off a certain number of gay folk who are listening to this going, what? But it just strikes me as the height of irony, the height of duplicity, the height of idiocy to say, okay, here, let's do this. Ha! All right. Gay folk, ha-ha, come on, you can partake of the military tradition, you can go kill stuff and be killed and have half your head shot off and blow up buildings and inadvertently kill, I'm sorry, it's called collateral damage, children and women and old people and young men and boys and girls, you can do all that, but goddamn you, you cannot get married. I'm sorry. I have a problem with that. So I am probably the only liberal in America who tonight is not saying, yay! Yes, by God, we did it! I appreciate the baby step forward. Gay people can now go kill and be killed without having to lie about their sexual orientation. Think about that for a second, if you would, okay? Just pause and think about the insanity of that. The whole thing is madness. A gay man, a lesbian woman, can go openly enlist. He or she cannot openly get married. And once enlisted, can kill. Can be killed. Can offer up arms and legs and brains and guts and their lives in order to perpetuate a system that says they can't get married. This is like black folk who served in World War II. The good war, amen. Yes, the good war. And when they came back to the United States, after fighting the Japanese and the Germans and the Spanish and the Italians and God knows who, they had to ride in the back of the goddamn bus that picked them up when the troop train dropped them off in Savannah, Georgia, to take them back to Atlanta. That's what this smells like to me. I'm sorry, I just don't get it.
I pray my wish will come true. As for my child and your child too, I'll sing my day of glory. I'll sing my day for him when men of good will live in peace again, and peace on earth.
You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe she'd been drinking too much eggnog, and we begged her not to go, but she forgot her medication.
10 before the hour.
Staggered out the door into the snow.
This hour has been sponsored by Margaret Head Insurance for all the nurses at Downey Regional Hospital. We stayed when they took our 10% away. We stayed when this hospital went into bankruptcy. Why? It's because we were the nurses who cared more than the hospital did. We give this to you because all of us care about free speech. It has been lost here for such a long time. We, all the nurses in the barrio, love you, Mike Malloy. Thank you very much to the people at Downey Regional Hospital. That's very kind. Got an email here from a professor of American history. At least that's what it says. And it's in reference to a bunch of garbage that Haley Barbour, the Gulf of Mississippi, said the other day regarding civil rights, the civil rights era, when all the violence and the lynchings and the murders and everything occurred, perpetrated against blacks primarily, but whites also who decided to work for human rights in this country for all people. And a lot of white people were murdered. Some buried in a dam outside Philadelphia, Mississippi, where Ronald Reagan saw fit to start his 1980 campaign. Lovely gentleman, wasn't he? Anyway, Haley Barbour, as I mentioned earlier, tried to hit the reset button on what really happened in this country during the so-called civil rights era. And this professor, Thomas Colbrese, writes, Confederate General Henry Wise's words to General Chamberlain at Appomattox Courthouse, this would have been during the surrender, quote, "You may forgive us, sir," this is the Southerner talking to the Northerner, "you may forgive us, sir, but we won't be forgiven. There is a rancor in our hearts which you little dream of. We hate you, sir," end quote. Professor Colbrese adds, add to this the book I'll Take My Stand, and recently Confederates in the Attic and Still Fighting the Civil War. Go to Gettysburg, where I once lived, and feel it. The South has been screwing up this country since the Three-Fifths Clause in the Constitution. Crackers like Barbour are probably of this ilk. The secession anniversary last week was a similar gesture. They prattle change, but not in their hearts. When a Southerner calls you a Yankee, it has meaning and derision. Why did Southerners vote for Democrats from 1861 to 1966? What are Dixiecrats? Why did that scumbag Reagan launch his 1980 presidential campaign from Philadelphia, Mississippi, de facto pissing on the graves of Violet Liuzzo, Cheney, Schwerner, and Goodman? Why is the Tea Party jerks so virulent? Why are the Tea Party jerks so virulent? It has to do with race. It all comes down to race, and having lived in the South briefly, I'm well aware of their phoniness. Yours in American History, Professor Thomas Colbrese. Yeah, revisionist history. Of course, you never know about history to begin with. Some of it you do because you have living, as long as you have living participants in what becomes history eventually, as long as there are witnesses to the Holocaust, as long as there were witnesses to slavery, as long as there were witnesses to the nuking of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, as long as there were witnesses to the destruction of Native Americans, then you had first-hand accounts. You had people who could stand up and say, this is what happened. I know because I was there. And then the historians take over. And history, the writing of history, of course, is determined, how it's written is determined by who does the writing. I think we all know that. But once the history has been agreed to by historians on both sides of a particular issue, and it's codified into books and libraries, and this is the way it was, starts to take effect, then along comes, eventually, no matter what the topic, the subject, the atrocity, along comes the revisionist. In the instance of the bloody civil rights struggle in this country in the South, the revisionists now are starting to crawl out from the woodwork. So many of the Klan leaders who perpetrated violence against black people and white people, but for the most part blacks, those people have either died, been sent to prison, or have crawled back under the rocks. So what do we have now? We have this emergence of people like Haley Barbour and Jeff Sessions and the rest of these Southern crackers who are determined, damn determined, to set the record straight. That ball, that dance over in Columbia, South Carolina the other night on the occasion of the 150th anniversary of Articles of Secession being written by the General Assembly in South Carolina. That if that wasn't a disgusting example of the sickness in this country, one of the sicknesses in this country, I don't know what would be. You know, I've said for years, decades, race is the one issue in this country that will never, under any circumstances, ever be resolved until such time as there has been a couple of centuries, or there have been a couple of centuries, of racial intermarriage, racial interbreeding. It's kind of like, and I realize that that pisses off a lot of black folks who say, wait a second, you know, we're not going to breed with whites. I understand. I'm just saying what the obvious observation would be. Same issue where it concerns the Israelis and the Palestinians, the Israeli Jews and the Palestinian Muslims and Christians. Until there is an intermarriage, an interbreeding, until we have lots of little Jewish Palestinian babies, you know, kind of like Jesus, until we have a lot of black and white mixed children, until that is so dissolved, until the point where it is no longer visible, because we are a very visual species, aren't we? You show me something that wiggles the wrong way or looks different or has a certain lilt or tilt to the way it lives.